Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
So what's on your plate? And are you eating what's on your plate? We know there's a story to why what's on your plate is on your plate. Why do you eat what you eat?
Hi, this is Kate from Rhode Island. I try to eat things that are mostly plant-based. When I do eat meat, I try to make it of high quality. It's very much of a Mark Bittman type of philosophy. Now, why I drink what I drink, that's another story.
I'm interested in this idea of a Mark Bittman sort of philosophy. Here in the studio, the New York Times food writer Mark Bittman is with us to talk about changing his and thereby our relationship with fish, the creatures of the sea. Mark, first of all, thanks for coming in.
Pleasure to be here.
I love this Mark Bittman sort of philosophy.
I wish I knew what it was.
Well, it relates to fish this morning. Explain, this is a huge decision for you to change your relationship with fish that goes really back to the beginnings of your career.
Yeah, the first book I wrote about and the first series of articles I wrote was about fish, and my philosophy, if there was one at that point, was see it, buy it, eat it. And I thought, you know, this is great. There are these hundreds of different creatures out there. They're all different. They're really interesting. I have a very, I guess, eclectic Catholic palate. I enjoyed everything, and I just thought this is fabulous. I had tutors. I had gurus. I bought every fish I saw, and as much as I could eat, and I learned how to cook and eat them and really, really enjoyed myself.
There is a challenge to cooking fish, which you've discovered and explored throughout your career, but there's also a moral challenge of consuming fish, which has become clear to you much more recently. Explain how your sort of moral compass changed how you taste something like Chilean sea bass.
Well, then I would say that just to touch on the first thing you said, the cooking part is really easy. And that's I think that probably helped me a lot early in my career because I didn't know how to cook that well. The moral part is becoming increasingly difficult. And starting at the end of World War II, but certainly at an accelerating rate through the 70s and 80s, we saw three increasing trends. One was the catching of fish by what effectively are factory fishing vessels. So huge trawlers, lines that are now so big that they could go 500 times around the earth, et cetera, et cetera. So this decimated a lot of fish stocks. We saw also the international trade in fish, so that instead of eating fish, which was local, and when we all sort of knew, you know, if you lived in New York, you knew you were going to see clams and flounder and porgy and squid and maybe tuna, but it was all sort of Long Islandish, Cape Codish, New Jersey-ish. We'd started to see things from New Zealand. And then the third thing was aquaculture, which was heralded at first, but has shown to have a lot of problems.
So technological developments like refrigeration, which accounts for the export of fish from all over the world, and this sort of industrial technology that allows the massive industrial harvesting of fish, and aquaculture, all technological changes have decimated the taste and numbers of all kinds of species?
Taste, not so much. Of course, if you think that big fish taste better than little fish, which sometimes they do, yes, because there aren't as many big fish as there used to be. In fact, some people say 90% of our really big fish are gone. Hmm. But numbers, you know, absolutely. I mean, probably half the fish in the world are endangered in one way or another.
Well, what I wanted to do is give listeners a real tangible sense of how you evaluate fish as Mark Bittman, with your Mark Bittman sort of philosophy, species by species. Now, here is a farm-raised salmon. Okay, you see this fish, looks gorgeous, but what's the cautionary tale behind it?
Well, farm-raised salmon, I thought, you know, we all thought, in a way, farm-raised salmon brought salmon to a much larger audience because before that, the Alaskan catch was mostly canned and it was seasonal anyway, and it was heralded as the dawn of a new age. This was aquaculture at its best, but it has been shown to be seriously polluting in the environments in which it's grown. It's often laden with antibiotics. There are some worries about whether escapees breed with wild fish and therefore degrade the quality of the wild fish or degrade their ability to survive in the wild.
It's a biodiversity question. Yeah.
And maybe that's enough reasons.
Well, what about Chilean sea bass? Looks delicious here on the plate.
Actually called Patagonian toothfish, Chilean sea bass was another of the many substitutes for cod, which itself was endangered long ago. And, you know, it tastes really good. But anytime the big marketers say, oh, here's a fish we can sell, and it starts to get sold in big numbers, it becomes endangered. And Chilean sea bass is actually coming off the endangered species list, but had a few very rough years there where the catch had to be limited.
So farm-raised shrimp, come on, this has to be benign. You're
not harvesting exactly the problem. It's benign. It doesn't taste like anything. In fact, farm-raising shrimp has gotten much better. There are fewer antibiotics. It's being done in a better manner. They have to figure out how to make it taste like something. It's simply not worth eating.
Now, this is a sort of a Holocaust-looking picture of bluefin tuna there at the harvest.
Japan, no doubt. Well, yeah. This is... you know, bluefin tuna is arguably one of the best-eating fish in the world, but it is seriously endangered. And really, if I had to say one thing, I would say don't eat it.
Don't eat bluefin.
Do not. Not until things change.
Tilapia? Come on. I can at least keep my tilapia.
Well, tilapia, you know, tilapia is getting better, but again, it's just, you can keep it. It's fine, but you better add a lot of flavor to it if you're cooking it, because there's none in there.
Now, how much of this is an agonized personal decision, and how much of it is a, you know, Mark Bittman's going to get a lot of attention if he swears off fish?
Well, I'm not doing it to get attention, and I don't even pretend to have the answers here. It's entirely an agonized personal decision because... Well, it's not that agonized. It's very clear to me this is the way that we have to go. You can't eat other species if you're going to decimate them. I mean, there's arguments to be made that you can't eat them at all. Having bypassed those arguments, I would like to say, if you want to eat bluefin tuna, you have to hold back for a few years, and maybe it'll come back to sustainable numbers again. It's not that difficult, and it's not that... complex.
The moral dimension of consumption of seafood. Mark Bittman, thanks so much for being with us.
Great to be here, John.
Mark Bittman, of course, the New York Times food writer who's decided to not revise his very first cookbook, which was called Fish, The Complete Guide to Buying and Cooking Fish.